Do you know someone with mild to moderate Alzheimer's? A clinical drug is being conducted to evaluate the safety and effectiveness of a study drug for the treatment of symptoms of Alzheimer's disease. Qualified participants must be 55 to 85 years old and have a support person to attend study visits. Qualified participants receive study-related medical care, memory testing, and routine lab work. Details at 215-884-1700, 215-884-1700. The Clinical Trial Center supports WHYY.
President Barack Obama came to Philadelphia this afternoon to address the NAACP convention. I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. WHYY's Tom McDonald was on hand and reports that the president's message focused on justice reform.
Dave, President Obama addressed the packed hall at the Pennsylvania Convention Center, who had been waiting for more than an hour and a half past his originally scheduled arrival time. He took to the podium and talked about the justice system and how it should be reformed. He spoke about the $80 billion cost of incarceration and how minorities are incarcerated more often. He says African Americans are more likely to be arrested. They're more likely to be sentenced to more time for the same crime. The president then went on and asked senators and congressmen to work together to pass meaningful criminal justice reform in order to cut down the number of those incarcerated by also making sure those who deserve to be put in jail are incarcerated. The president then called for changes in the community, the courtroom, and the cell block. The president will travel to a federal prison this week to, in his words, shine a light on the prison situation. He believes overcrowding, gang activity, and even prison rape, which he says are all unacceptable. He also added restoring the right to vote for those who have served their debt to society. The president is now going to a DNC function in Center City before heading back to Washington. Reporting live, I'm Tom McDonald, WHYY News.
And while focusing on reforming the criminal justice system, President Obama also mentioned clemency, both inmates he's spared already and those who should get relief through a program organized by the U.S. Justice Department. Philadelphia law firm Ballard Spahr has been participating in the program, and joining me now is Mary Gay Scanlon, pro bono counsel for Ballard Spahr. She also chairs the firm's pro bono committee. Mary Gay, thanks for joining us on NewsWorks Tonight.
Thank you for having me.
For the federal program to review clemency requests, how many outstanding requests are there at this juncture?
Under the program that was started by the U.S. Department of Justice last April, 35,000 federal inmates have applied for clemency. The Department of Justice does not have the personnel to review all those applications and determine whether or not they meet the five-point screening criteria that's been set up by the Department of Justice, so they've called on the national private bars to help screen those petitions. So the American Bar Association, Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights, an array of civil rights groups have recruited people and trained them to do that work.
So the 90 commutations to date are a fraction of 1% of those who might likely be eligible.
That is correct.
Review for listeners the distinction between a commutation and a presidential pardon.
The clemency grant that is on the table here would end people's sentences at an earlier date than they would have otherwise had to serve. So people who were sentenced to life in prison for relatively low-level drug offenses could potentially get out in 2015 or 2016. Their crime would not be erased, but their sentence would be shortened, and the idea is that it would be shortened to a level that is more appropriate to the crime committed.
Take us back to the 1980s and 90s when these mandatory minimum sentencing guidelines widely went into effect.
Well, that is what's created the issue now. So since the 80s and 90s, as a result of mandatory sentencing at both the federal and state level, the U.S. prison population has increased exponentially. And what we've seen is that under today's sentencing laws, people who were sentenced back in the 80s and 90s would not have received the same duration of sentence that they would get today. We've also seen that it's had a devastating effect on the ability to rehabilitate people who go to prison, the ability to maintain communities, and a disproportionate impact on low-income minority communities.
Tell us more specifically about Ballard Spahr's program to review the clemency requests.
Well, Ballard Spahr signed on to something called the Clemency Project, which is this initiative to organize members of the private bar to help review these petitions and see who might actually meet the criteria. We have 85 attorneys have volunteered. That's about 20% of our law firm.
What are the key points of that criteria listing?
First of all, the candidates have to be serving a federal sentence. that and would have received a substantially lower sentence if convicted of the same offense today. They must be a nonviolent, low-level offender without significant ties to gangs or criminal organizations. They have to have served at least 10 years of the sentence and have no significant criminal history. They have to have good conduct in prison. And I think I said already, no history of violence prior to or during their current stay in prison.
It would be polite to say that at this juncture, the number of clemency grants is even chipping away at the total. What would it take to really make an impact?
I think that the Clemency Project here, since you're limited to the federal prisons, you're not even addressing state prisons, it is an awareness exercise in a lot of ways. It's been incredibly enlightening to me and the other business lawyers that I work with who are working on this. They got into it for a variety of reasons, people who are interested in reducing the cost of prison and people who view it as an injustice. But it's been a huge educational process. All of a sudden, we're more aware of the issue of mass incarceration and the articles on it in the New York Times and the Washington Post and in various journals around the country.
So you're not merely speaking awareness for those within the sphere of those who can make a difference. You're talking about public awareness.
I think it's public awareness, and I think that's what it's going to take in order to pass the legislation that will address these larger issues.
Mary Gay Scanlon, thanks so much for joining us on NewsWorks tonight.
Thank you.
Mary Gay Scanlon is pro bono counsel for Ballard Spahr. She chairs the firm's pro bono committee. Former Harrisburg Mayor Stephen Reed faces nearly 500 counts of theft, bribery, and other charges. His arrest comes nearly 18 months after a grand jury was convened to investigate the finances of Pennsylvania's distressed capital city. Keystone Crossroads' Emily Previty reports that there's more to come.
The charges stem from financial transactions responsible for the city's near bankruptcy and its ongoing struggle to keep its streets clean and safe. How that happened is detailed in a 57-page grand jury presentment released by State Attorney General Kathleen Kane. It says Reed and other officials leveraged hundreds of millions of dollars in debt through the city of Harrisburg, its school district and parking authority, and the Harrisburg Civic Baseball Club. Kane says they'd say they were borrowing money for one reason, then use some of it for another.
This is about making sure that when you issue public debt on behalf of the Harrisburg School District, the school district gets all of that money and the renovations are actually made.
Often, the other purpose would be for Reed's personal gain, such as keeping artifacts bought for public museums. Kane promises more charges against others. She just won't say how many or when. For now, Reed says he's not going down easily.
I devoted my life to the city of Harrisburg, and I look forward to waging a vigorous fight.
The man once known as the Mayor for Life is due in court again next week. Emily Previty, Keystone Crossroads, Harrisburg.
Keystone Crossroads is a statewide public media collaboration focusing on Pennsylvania cities, their problems, and potential solutions. WHYY leads the four-station project. Check out keystonecrossroads.org for details on the grand jury's report. Small business owners were among those devastated when Superstorm Sandy swept across the East Coast in 2012, and following that, many applied for federal loans to pay for recovery costs. The process of securing one of those Small Business Administration loans took a lot longer than expected, causing many to withdraw or cancel their applications. WHYY's Joe Hernandez reports that a bill is now making its way through Congress that would let small businesses affected by Sandy reapply for that money.
Initially, the Small Business Administration hoped to process loans for Sandy victims in 21 days. Turns out it took the agency an average of 45 days to decide on applications. Lori Pepinella is the communications director for the Southern Ocean County Chamber of Commerce. She says the delays caused people to miss out on funding.
We had several workshops, and there was a lot of different criteria that had to be met. And at a time of disaster, a lot of those things weren't available. So people were putting in applications, and they weren't getting immediate responses, so they didn't necessarily get the loan.
A bill currently in Congress would let small business owners affected by the storm reapply for the loans. New Jersey State Senator Jim Whalen says that's a good idea because many business owners are still recovering from the storm nearly 3 years later. He adds that any business owners who think they might be eligible for the loans should check.
I know of a restaurant in Atlantic City that is still operating out of a truck. they should certainly look into whether or not they would be eligible to get some help to shore up their business going forward.
The bill would also streamline the agency's disaster response rules and ensure there's enough staff on hand during future catastrophes. Earlier this year, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA, reopened more than 140,000 claims from homeowners with Sandy damage after allegations that they were given less than they were due. The small business loan bill passed in the House. It now heads to the U.S. Senate for a vote. For WHYY News, I'm Joe Hernandez.
Turning to this evening's headlines, the Philadelphia Foundation today announced Pedro Ramos as the newly appointed president and CEO. He succeeds R. Andrew Swinney, who retired last month after 16 years of service. Ramos, formerly a chair of the Philadelphia School Reform Commission, is the first Latino to lead the Philadelphia Foundation and will assume his new post next month. New Jersey voters will not be asked this November to decide whether to expand casino gambling beyond Atlantic City. Senate President Stephen Sweeney confirmed today the clock on the procedural calendar runs out today, meaning the referendum will not be on the ballot this year. Partly sunny skies, 83 degrees on Independence Mall, it's 617. You're listening to Newsworks Tonight on WHYY. Showers and thunderstorms making their way across our region this evening and overnight, low 72 degrees. A chance of showers tomorrow morning, remaining cloudy, muggy, Wednesday's high 86. And then sunny days, Thursday and Friday, high both days in the low 80s. For the weekend, partly sunny, Saturday and Sunday, high both days in the mid to upper 80s. Still ahead, frescoes on the ceiling of St. Augustine's Church are granted historical designation.
You know, we like to be able to raise money for an endowment for perpetual care of the actual building. We would like to maybe have people know the historic significance of this.
Newsworks Tonight continues on WHYY.
People's Light presents the regional premiere of Bruce Graham's Stella and Lou, July 15th through August 23rd. On a quiet night in Lou's South Philadelphia bar, two lonely spirits arrive at a shared crossroad. This funny, wise, and tender love story is a portrait of a later-in-life friendship and taking the next step. For tickets, 610-644-3500 or peopleslight.org. People's Light supports WHYY.
Next time in Studio 360, the brilliant Taylor Mack dives deep into the history of American pop music and brings it back to life one decade at a time.
And the 1770s decade is about how America was founded on booze, man-boy love, and dandy revenge.
That's next time in Studio 360 from PRI and WNYC.
Get more interesting tonight at 10 on WHYY.
The Franklin Institute supports WHYY and is now featuring the exhibit Genghis Khan, Bring the Legend to Life. From the lush grasslands of Mongolia to the steps of the Franklin Institute, Genghis Khan. Visitors can enter the tents, battlegrounds, and marketplaces of a vanished world and see more than 200 rare artifacts, including gold jewelry, weaponry, silk robes, monuments, and documents nearly 1,000 years old. Genghis Khan at the Franklin Institute, where the legend comes to life. Learn more at fi.edu.
Welcome back to Newsworks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. As Marcellus shale drilling has proliferated, so has the amount of waste it generates. Last year in Pennsylvania, more than 2 million tons of drill cuttings were sent to landfills. That's the waste, dirt, and rock that comes up from drilling gas wells. It contains naturally occurring radiation, as well as heavy metals and industrial chemicals. Though one company has found a novel and controversial way to avoid landfills. As State Impact Pennsylvania's Marie Cusick reports, critics say it's also a way to avoid regulations.
As the manager of the Wellsboro-Johnston Airport, Craig Musser has a plan to try to get more air traffic to this rural patch of north central Pennsylvania. But a lot of people really don't like the idea. He hops in his car and drives to the edge of the runway to show me.
If I didn't feel it was safe, I wouldn't want to do it either.
So what's all the fuss about? Well, a Montgomery County-based waste disposal company called Clean Earth is proposing to haul in nearly 500,000 tons of gas industry waste, specifically processed drill cuttings, in order to extend the runway out by 600 feet. Musser thinks it will help the airport and, in turn, the local economy.
To bring growth, you know, an airport is a vital step towards that.
The plan has been met with major pushback here in Tioga County, one of the most drilled-on places in the state. That's because the airport sits high atop one of the region's most beautiful natural assets and a major tourist destination, the Pine Creek Gorge. It's often called the Grand Canyon of Pennsylvania. The airport's runway is next to a steep embankment that's only half a mile from a tributary to the gorge. And that embankment is exactly where Clean Earth wants to put the drill cuttings. Tioga County Commissioner Eric Coolidge is a Republican who says drillers have been a godsend to the area. But he and many other gas industry supporters, including State Senate Pro Tem Joe Scarnati, are not sold on the plan.
My concerns are that this product has not yet been given an 100% okay, and until it does, then I'm not going to be in favor of it.
Not far from the airport, the visitor center at the Leonard Harrison State Park plays a video showing the gorge and all the efforts over the years to keep it in a pristine state. Ed Osgood thinks it would be a big mistake to put so much drilling waste next to the gorge.
We have no long-term peer-reviewed studies to indicate that this material is safe.
He's a member of the Pine Creek Headwaters Protection Group, and he's worried that when it rains, the drilling waste could run into the gorge.
By the way, I think the name Clean Earth is somewhat ironic. This is anything but clean earth.
Thanks to an exemption in federal law, none of the waste generated by the oil and gas industry is considered hazardous, no matter what's in it. Clean Earth declined multiple interview requests, but says it's been handling the waste with, quote, the highest integrity. They've already disposed of more than 172,000 tons of it in recent years, thanks to a special permit from the State Department of Environmental Protection. The company got it to do research and development to study the beneficial reuse of drill cuttings. In other words, they want to do something with it rather than send it off to a landfill. Steve Sokash has been in charge of reviewing the permit for DEP.
We're still evaluating the information at the current time. You know, we haven't completed our review of Clean Earth's conclusions.
Over the past 3 years, Clean Earth has been putting drill cuttings onto polluted industrial sites around the state, known as brownfields. And this has really rubbed some people in the waste business the wrong way. In 2013, the Pennsylvania Waste Industries Association, which is a trade group representing landfill owners, sent a letter to DEP urging it to deny a renewal of Clean Earth's permit. They argued it's not really a small-time research operation. Instead, it's a full-scale commercial enterprise designed to avoid regulations. The DEP ended up renewing the permit, which remains valid until 2017. Although the agency is still studying the practice, Sokash doesn't think people should be alarmed by the idea of recycling drill cuttings.
DEP believes that evaluating drill cuttings to determine if they can be beneficially used for a number of uses in Pennsylvania is a good idea.
Earlier this year, the DEP issued a study which found the natural radiation from drill cuttings posed little threat to public health. It said that disposal techniques in landfills were safe, but it didn't look at the kind of work Clean Earth is doing, whether or not it's safe to reuse the waste. Back in Tioga County, the Pine Creek Headwaters Protection Group has been meeting regularly to investigate the airport project.
The building that they're building to be their headquarters in north central Pennsylvania.
Group member Bryn Hammerstrom has been upset by the surge in gas drilling in his backyard in recent years, but he thinks this project simply goes too far.
We can't stop hydraulic fracturing, but we can at least try and make the disposal of the byproducts of hydraulic fracturing done as safely to the environment and to the population of Tioga County as possible.
The DEP says it doesn't know when it will make a decision about the project. Marie Cusick, State Impact, Pennsylvania.
The Philadelphia Historical Commission has granted historic designation to a series of paintings on the ceiling of an Old City Catholic church. From WHYY's Arts and Culture Desk, Peter Crimmins reports that they're the oldest existing fresco paintings in America.
Well,
Father Bill Waters leads a midday mass for a small handful of people.
Fruit of the earth, work of human hands.
St. Augustine is a small parish at the foot of the Ben Franklin Bridge, originally founded in 1790, in part by George Washington himself. Now it caters mostly to Filipino immigrants and young millennials, two demographics not known to have a lot of money lying around. Nevertheless, Father Waters says the historic church, filled with religious art, needs to be maintained.
You know, we like to be able to raise money for an endowment for perpetual care of the actual building. We would like to maybe have people know the historic significance of this.
Last week's decision by the Philadelphia Historical Commission could help. It granted historic designation to the ceiling frescoes painted in 1848 by the Italian artist Nicola Monacesi. Frescoes are painted by applying pigment directly into wet plaster before it dries. It requires the artist to be very fast and very confident. Historian Celeste Morello lobbied the commission on behalf of these frescoes, which depict St. Augustine in heaven. She says the artist mimicked both the technique and the style Raphael used on Vatican frescoes in the 16th century.
The types of figures, how they were placed, the arabesques, little curly decorative borders. He borrowed everything from Raphael. About a decade or two later, those same conventions are seen in the United States Capitol in Washington, D.C.
The building itself, whose spire is plainly visible from the Ben Franklin Bridge, already has historic protections and a state marker. This new designation applies only to the ceiling paintings, which are slightly damaged. I'm Peter Crimmins, WHYY News.
That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yakov and Kimberly Haas. Listen again to a story or catch up on a missed show via podcast or online at newsworks.org. With another summer thunderstorm headed our way this evening, the Philadelphia Water Department is instituting some new ways to keep up with stormwater management with their aging infrastructure, and we'll hear about their latest efforts on tomorrow's show. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for NewsWorks Tonight.
Karen Treatment Center supports WHYY. Is someone you care about struggling, losing interest in activities they loved? Changes like these can be a sign of drug and alcohol abuse. As a behavioral health care and addiction treatment center, Karen helps families understand when professional help is warranted, offering therapies that restore wellness in body, mind, and spirit. A confidential assessment is available at 855-894-4325 or at karen.org. That's C-A-R-O-N.org.